can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
And we live.
Hello and welcome back to another How Many Cocks Can Your Cum Dumpster Hold? Episode of the First Time Watchers Podcast.
The fuck? Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Romano Da Silva.
This is Walter Vinci.
What we like to do on the FTW Podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you would like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback...
Yeah, feedback!
We would like to thank one of our followers on Twitter, Johanna, at Johanna Sphere. She wrote, "Happy that I checked out your podcast. It's awesome. Guess I'm one of the nerdy girls that loved Pacific Rim."
Hells yeah!
Oh, and we love you.
Nice.
You're cool with us.
Yes. In this episode, we'll be discussing Hermano's most anticipated film of the year, Only God Forgives.
Yeah!
But before we get into that, it is time for Yay or Nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own, and I will let Walter go first.
All right, well, this movie that I'm about to talk about is a movie that apparently people have been waiting for me to watch. I've noticed on the Twitter, like on Twitter, they're like, "Oh, I can't wait to hear what his review is." And I'm going to spoil the shit out of this movie because, you know what? No one should watch this movie.
Whoa.
This movie is awful.
Whoa. Does it... Are the initials KL?
It is KL.
No, please don't. Please respect my viewing pleasure because I do want to watch
it. You haven't seen it yet?
No.
Oh, you don't want to see it, dude. This movie sucks. The movie is Kill List, okay? This movie starts off as being a really cool, kind of a strange mystery. These two men who are former military that have turned hitmen, and they have a list of three people they have to kill. And every time they go to a hit, one of the targets' names comes up. Like, there's the priest, and then there's the librarian. So I'm like, all right, this is... kind of neat because...
When you say it comes up, you mean on the screen?
On the screen. It's black screen with white text. Mm-hmm. It says, "The Priest." So I'm like, all right, sounds like code names. This could be kind of cool, kind of cloak and daggery. And then a weird thing happens where the targets always say thank you before something crazy happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the third act, and I was ready to throw my DVD player out the window. I was so pissed. I so incredibly angry about how this movie just goes, and I heard that it goes off the rails.
It does go off the rails,
and I was expecting like cool off the rails, like, all right, this might be like a really cool, like maybe they bite off more than they can chew.
You were
bad
expecting
guy.
Crank 2 off the rails.
No, I was thinking like maybe along the lines of like you have a bad guy that maybe that's like a lot more powerful than you, and then these guys are gonna run for their lives, mm-hmm. you know, or it was just gonna amp up and be really, really like I thought the tension was just gonna be like. Off the charts tension, and I got stupidity, utter stupidity, and fucking retarded is what this is.
I am really, really curious to see this movie now.
Tim, you're gonna. Oh my god!
So
this movie is awful.
I've seen this, and I'm not as harsh as Wally. I kind of don't agree with you. Like, I actually was, I thought the movie started kind of rough, like, because you really don't know what these guys are until about half an hour in.
Yes.
Like, it literally, you're in the room with two guys just hanging out.
Yeah.
And it's not till a little bit later that the one guy just says to the other guy, "Come on, man, come back, you know, you messed up 4 months ago, like, apparently there was something bad happened four months ago in Kiev. Yeah, and he's taken 4 months off. He needs the money, he gets his friend to go back in and go do some hits with them. That's when I thought the movie started getting better, when they start doing the hits. And yet, you're right, there's this weird element where the people that are getting hit are not reacting the way you thought they would react, like begging for their lives or something like that.
They just turn around and they smile and they say thank you.
Yeah, and then it just kind of goes from there. And yes, I agree with you, it does completely go off the rails, but I don't agree that it's way, way out of left field. Like, you don't expect this to happen, because all of a sudden it goes from like kind of like a... like a kind of a thriller movie
thriller/spy movie/crime movie.
Yes, to something completely different. Like, almost like I closest thing I can say, I guess, is maybe like a horror movie. And it has this element towards the end that I was just like, what the hell? This reminds me of another movie that I can't mention because it would probably be a spoiler. But I thought it was not bad. I didn't think it was great, you know, like a masterpiece or anything like that, but I think it's something that people should watch.
So, Wally, this is directed by Ben Wheatley, who is like a fairly well-regarded British indie filmmaker. Would you ever consider watching another movie of his?
Well, here's the thing. I saw him in ABCs of Death. He did You for Unearth, that's right. Which I dug.
Yes.
I was like, that's pretty cool. So how the hell did he go from... I mean, this obviously had to have been like something like he was just like either starting... I have no idea, because this movie is just so... The first two-thirds are good, and then you get to that last third, and that last third completely stains the rest of the movie. Hmm. Completely ruins the rest of the movie for me. So this is a nay. A fuck no nay on Kill List.
Is that it for you?
Yes.
Hermano?
All right, I watched two movies. First one was... I rewatched District 9.
Yeah, we just discussed that last week.
Yeah. Got me in the mood to watch it, and it's still awesome. Totally holds up. I feel like this is one of those movies that, as sci-fi movies go, I don't want to say it's going to hold up like, say, Alien or Blade Runner does, but I think it's probably, you can probably put it, I think it's a safe bet to say that this movie will be revered years from now, like those movies I just mentioned. I don't know how much more I can say about it. I'm just going to gush like all over this movie. I mean, it's excellent movie. I mean, if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Great, great science fiction. Great, like, organic sci-fi, like, weaponry. And the alien designs, I think, are great. Charlton Copley is, like, a welcome, like, surprise. Like, you know, like Tim said last week, like, he kind of came out of nowhere. And I thought he was great. He's in excellent. The movie. And, yeah, like, a great, like, first-time feature-length effort from like a, I mean he'd done shorts before this, but
did you know that Neil Blomkamp was offered one of the new Star Wars movies, but he turned it down because he wants to do original movies?
He wants to concentrate. Yeah, I had
Neil Blomkamp.
That.
I love you.
Yes,
that's very.
Despite
admirable.
What you thought of Elysium, you give him credit for that.
I will always give him credit because I love original. Like even like Elysium is still an original story. Sure. Like, and I will always gravitate more towards something that's brand new and fresh, which I haven't seen before, than I would something like, oh, let's do another sequel.
Well, and supposedly he's doing a rough draft, or has a rough draft on District 10, but even then, it's a sequel to one of his own original movies. Yeah. I'd still be willing to watch that.
Yeah, so, I mean, obvious yay for that. And then I watched the movie that came out earlier this year that I had no intention of seeing this in theaters because I didn't think it looked that strong, but Mia kind of wanted to watch a sci-fi movie, and it was on it wasn't on, actually. We had to order it on demand.
You don't sound too thrilled about that.
It's called Oblivion.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen this yet.
Basically, a synopsis: a veteran assigned to extract Earth's remaining resources begins to question what he knows about his mission and himself.
Why did you get this on demand? It's on DVD right now. You could have gotten it from Netflix.
I know. I don't know. She was just in that mood, like, must-watch sci-fi movie right now.
Oh, women.
So, we checked it out. It stars Tom Cruise, got Morgan Freeman in it, Olga Kurylenko, Andrea Riceborough. You know what? I gotta admit, it's not as bad as I thought it was gonna be. I just think it's a little long. I know it's my mainstay complaint.
Two hours and 4 minutes.
Yes. I think it takes a little long. Actually, I shouldn't say it's a little long. I should say it takes a little long to get to the point. I think the first, like, 45 minutes of this movie, you have no idea what's going on. You just kind of follow along Tom Cruise. And basically what's happened is there was a...
45 minutes?
At least 45 minutes.
Wow.
You just meet Tom Cruise, you kind of see his daily duties and what he does, and then something happens and the movie goes from there. So maybe the next hour or so, an hour and 15 minutes, are pretty much the main crux of the movie. Basically, Tom Cruise is assigned to extract resources, like the synopsis says... And you just kind of see him also protecting, and he's like a repairman for these drones that are on the planet that are tasked to take out any straggler aliens, because there was this war. The Earth went to war against these aliens. They won, but it ravaged the Earth. Like, the Earth is pretty much like, you know, like it just looks like a war zone. Once it gets going is the part of the movie that I really liked. Like, I thought it was original enough, though. If people watching it will probably be like, this movie definitely draws from a lot of other movies before it. I won't get into those movies because it would definitely be huge spoilers. Just even mentioning what movie it takes like premises from. I think that it does bring some stuff to the table that I thought was genuinely like new or fresh that I hadn't really seen done much before. I think the movie is gorgeous. It's directed by Joseph Krasinski, I believe, who directed the most recent Tron movie. And if nothing else, the Tron movie, if you say what you will about the movie itself, it looked gorgeous.
I this loved movie, the Tron movie.
Yeah, I'm not a hater. I thought it was okay. Yeah, I think it was great. This movie looks fucking gorgeous. It's one of the most beautiful movies I've seen all year. I'd say right up there with like the way Prometheus looked. Right. Though I liked Prometheus more. I think it's not that bad. I'm not going to say... I'll say light yay. Definitely worth watching. Though I think that, you know, if you're somebody that is like, hey, I've seen this done in other movies before, there's at least three or four things in this movie that I've seen that I think it draws from other movies. So that might turn you off. But otherwise, I didn't think it was nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. So I'll give it a light yay.
All right. I have three movies to talk about. First one... is a movie that I had totally forgotten that I was expecting, that I really was looking forward to this year. And that was the latest movie by Quentin Dupuis called Wrong. This is his follow-up to...
I want to see this movie
This
so
is
bad.
His follow-up to Rubber. And, okay, I'm going to read you this synopsis. Dolph Springer wakes up one morning to realize that he has lost the love of his life, his dog, Paul. During his quest to get Paul and his life back, Dolph radically changes the lives of others, risking his sanity all the while. Okay, this does not even begin to explain what this movie is about, because that is like, I mean, it's so hard to even begin to comprehend this movie, because if you thought that Rubber was meandering and existential... In which I thought was in all the good ways. Because yes. When Rubber came out, that was like my second or third favorite movie of the year.
The movie's awesome.
The movie is tremendously ballsy. This movie, I was in awe of its balls in the fact that it negates any sense of reality whatsoever. I mean, Let me give you one example. He goes to work one day. Each time he goes to work, he enters the office and it's raining inside the office.
I'm already in.
It's never explained. It's never explained why. It's never explained as if it's a sprinkler system or if it's actually raining, because it looks like it's raining. And everybody is working nonplussed. They're drenched. Their papers are drenched. Everything is drenched. And I'm like, what is going on here? So he actually has to go into his manager's office one day. And you see, next to the door, when he enters, is a pile of towels. And she says, oh, just take a towel. You know, and oh, place it on the chair, please. You know, but as if it's like an everyday occurrence.
Is it raining in the boss's office is what I need to know.
No.
That's awesome. I need to see this
there
movie.
There are so many strange things in which people act in completely unrealistic ways. David Fichtner is in this movie.
Okay.
He plays this, like, self-help guru who shows up out of nowhere, and he has this strange affectation to his voice, which is an accent Jodie Foster could only begin to have hope for in Elysium, but even though I don't know what kind of accent he's going for. I think his last name is Chang. It could be Asian, an Asian accent, but I have no idea. There's just... Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's... I won't say it's not nearly as strong as Rubber. It's definitely not as good as Rubber, because Rubber made all the wrong sense in the right ways. In this movie, I really can't comprehend it. I have no idea what I watched. I
can't wait to see this movie.
I have no idea what I watched.
Just making it more and more appetizing for me.
Yeah, well, I kept thinking of you. I'm like, oh man, I think you're really going to love this movie. I think Hermano wouldn't even care for this movie at all. Yeah, for some reason I came up on his name again, and Quentin Dupuis, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, didn't he have a movie coming out? And I saw it, and I immediately put his movie to the top of my queue. So I think overall I have to say meh. It just I really have no idea what I watched. Next I will talk about X-Men 2. I in my continuing quest to follow Wolverine's and company's adventures again.
The best of the X-Men series.
The
first three.
First three. I'll get back to you after I rewatch X3 again.
Okay.
Yes, this is a much stronger movie than the first one, mainly because I think Bryan Singer learned from his mistakes in the first one that he released 3 years prior to this. And he was able to edit around more of the wire work, and it didn't show nearly as bad at all. And the special effects were improved, especially I completely forgotten about the opening Nightcrawler scene
on
the White House. I'm like, oh my god, this is so awesome. And just his introduction in general to the team, you know, is really cool. They give him a cool backstory, and it's really nice to see how they're able to balance all the team members in this, and even introduce some of the kids, you know, and they're wanting to become more than what they're allowed to in school. Especially just the brief scene with when there's the raid on the school and
Colossus shows up. Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I can help. And Wolverine says, you help them, you know? It's just a really nice touch. I love Brian Cox as the bad guy playing a Stryker. He does a good job. He always plays a good job playing a bad guy. Anna Paquin is better in this film. I when I last talked about X1, she was awful. In this one, she's better. But, you know, she plays just a typical love interest of Iceman, I guess. And then...
the guy from Top Gun?
No. Pyro. I wish that I got a little bit more of why he just... You know, why he feels alienated and why he goes towards Magneto's side by the end. But I think they also do a better job of having Mystique in this movie and introducing her abilities of camouflage and really the breakout scene of Magneto is really cool. I would give this movie a yay. This is a really fine movie. And finally, I'll talk about a movie that came out earlier this year and was directed by a little person named Harmony Korine, and it is Spring Breakers. So, the only other movie of Harmony Korine's I saw, which really wasn't, it was only written by him, and that was Kids.
Okay. I hated Kids.
Why did you hate Kids?
That movie's just garbage.
Why?
It's not a good movie. It's just a bunch of misanthropic, miserable people, and I can't abide by that movie. I saw it once, I was like, I wish I never saw this movie.
Well, I think that was the point of that movie.
Even then, the movie is so stupid. I can't.
Well, why was it stupid though?
You can't base a movie on people who are just angry, miserable people.
Well, who are just teenagers.
Yeah,
they're teenagers who are angry, miserable teenagers who do completely terrible, terrible things.
I can't watch a movie like that. That movie is just, I can't do it.
But why? What's the reason behind that?
Every single person, there's not a single likable character in this movie. I'm sitting there watching this going, God, when is this movie going to be over?
So you need at least one likable, relatable character.
I need at least a protagonist. There are no... Everyone there, there's not. Especially that douchey kid with the fucking AIDS.
Well, yeah. You had seen that movie, Hermano, right?
Kids, yeah. I remember when I was younger, I went out of my way to see that movie.
Yeah.
I had to find the theater near us that was playing, and the closest one was like 40 miles away or something like that.
Wow.
And we went, and I liked it back then. I actually own it.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. It's not one of those movies you rewatch over and over, but...
Well, you would hate this movie. Spring Breakers. So, IMDb describes it as four college girls who land in jail while on their spring break vacation find themselves bailed out by a drug and arms dealer who wants them to do some dirty work. Now, that drug and arms dealer is played by none other than James Franco, who you will not recognize. If you did not know this is James Franco, you'd be like, this is James Franco? Holy shit. James Franco is amazing in this film. His character is a complete asshole, but his performance is one of the best performances I've seen this year. The movie, though, very unsettling. And I had seen a lot of praise earlier on in the year for this movie, and how I was saying, oh, it's so hilarious, it's so funny, and I don't know what the fuck people are talking about. This movie is not funny at all. This movie is very unsettling. And I saw it last night, and I'm still trying to comprehend it, because, you know, there really isn't any likable characters, except for maybe Selena Gomez, and she plays, her name is Faith. It's a little on the nose, but she's a Bible-thumping do-gooder, who her character is fine. It's not, just the fact that her name is Faith is on the nose. Everything else about her is subtle, you know, it's not over the top. Nothing about this movie is, performance-wise, except for James Franco, is over the top. Like I said, there's no likable characters, and especially the two main girls, Ashley Benson and Vanessa Hudgens, they play complete detestable people. Their motivations, I mean, I guess Harmony Korine is trying to go for some sort of take, some sort of theme of what today's youth culture is like. I mean, obviously, I think based on his filmography, that he's obsessed with youth culture, and he continues that in this one. And
so we haven't gotten any better from Kids.
Well, I think Kids was very effective in showing the youth and how misanthropic they are, and how ultimately just those kids were negated any sense of lawlessness, you know, law essentially, personally and ethically and whatever. This one, I don't know what theme or what message he's trying to say. I mean, it's just an unsettling movie, and I can't really recommend it to everybody, although it is well made. It's well shot. So I would ultimately give it a meh, you know. So, anyways. So I just wanted to take this time to mention that we have a YouTube page.
What's YouTube?
Ah, Jesus. You're never gonna let that go, are you? We don't have much content on it now, but as time goes by, we are adding content. And if you visit youtube.com/1sttimewatchers, you will be able to see behind the show content, in show content. I'm sure each of us will be adding content, on our
soon.
Own. Yes. So once again, another way to enjoy the show, that is youtube.com/1sttimewatchers. All right, let's go into Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. Walter?
All right, I'm going to talk about a trailer that you've already actually talked about, Tim. You hitched to Captain Phillips.
Yes.
And I saw the same trailer you saw, mm-hmm. and I, too, said, all right, you know what, I'm in, I'll check this movie out. And then I saw the second trailer, and now I'm back being on the fence again.
Really?
The second trailer, the way it's cut and the clips that it shows, looks like it's trying to garner some sort of sympathy for the pirates.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck the pirates, okay? I absolutely detest, like, these kind of people that just feel that they can just take... You know, because they have guns, I guess, these unarmed people, and just I can't, like, we see them, like, it's supposed to be easy, it's supposed to be just, you know, hold you for ransom and get the money and get away. No, fuck, you get a bullet in your head, get dropped overboard. That's how I would solve this shit. And I'm glad they got what they deserved at the end, because spoilers for real life, you already know how this movie's gonna end. but just the fact that this movie looks like it's trying to garner some sort of sympathy for the pirates is kind of put me off to it. So, I mean, I'm probably still going to see it, but I know that's going to be... I'm going to be hard-pressed when it comes to those scenes to let the movie get to me. Because I don't feel that there should be any mercy towards pirates. or anything like that. I think they should just be exterminated because they would do the same to you.
So you're essentially, you're tentatively hitching here.
I was hitching before, and now it's more of a tenuous hitch. Mm-hmm. But it's got Tom Hanks in it, which Tom Hanks performances, I'm always down for a good Tom Hanks performance, and he looks like he's going to be awesome in this. Sure. But it's just that those clips right there really, really turned me off.
Interesting. I will talk about the trailer for Ron Howard's newest film.
Rush?
Rush, yes.
You're welcome.
And this one is starring Chris Hemsworth and Olivia Wilde. And the last trailer I saw for this was like a pretty extended trailer. And it once again, this is another trailer that shows most of the movie. And I complained about that a couple of weeks ago with Paranoia.
Yep.
But with this movie, even though it shows a lot, I still think it left a lot to like.
It's still going to be plenty to see, I think.
Right. Yes. It showed a lot to like. And I mean, I like Chris Hemsworth, and I like the fact that he's keeping his Australian accent, and he's not going to be trying to hide it, you know?
Yep.
I'm not even familiar with the story that it's based on. It's about Australian Formula One champion driver Niki Lauda and the 1976 crash that almost claimed his life. And only weeks after the accident, he gets behind the wheel to challenge his British rival, James Hunt. So, you know, the idea of like a cocky man, you know, maybe being taken down a step a peg. Maybe it looks like he might have a little bit of Maverick syndrome in him, you know. And Ron Howard's a pretty decent director. You know, he's a little hit and miss with me. But I like the look of this trailer. I think all the racing scenes are beautifully shot. Like,
especially the slow-mo scenes where they're in the rain, and those look fantastic.
This looks like something a little outside of maybe Ron Howard's wheelhouse, you know, a kind of an action drama.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to this. I'm pretty anxious to see this. So I'll hitch to this one. Hermano?
All right, the trailer I want to talk about is for the sequel to a movie that I liked quite a bit, and that's Insidious Chapter 2. I think the mere existence of this movie and the fact that it has the same actors as the other one is kind of a spoiler for the first one, because you know that people survive. But basically, the synopsis is, the haunted Lambert family seeks to uncover the mysterious childhood secret that has left them dangerously connected to the spirit world. So it stars the same characters, Patrick Wilson, Rose Byrne, the same kids. I remember initially, after seeing the trailer for the first one, I thought it looked interesting, and then I watched the movie, and I thought it was pretty good. Watching this trailer, it didn't leave me with that same feeling. I thought visually, a lot of the stuff didn't look as interesting. I felt like it was kind of more the same, only it looked not as good. Have you guys seen this trailer?
I have.
What did you think?
I'm surprised that you say it doesn't look as visually interesting, because I think it looks very similarly shot to the first one.
It does. Well, that's the thing. It's directed by the same exact guy, James Wan, who was just coming off of The Conjuring, which I thought was pretty good. But I don't see anything in this trailer that was anything as good as the trailer for The Conjuring. Like, I just felt like a lot of this stuff
Should you really be comparing it to The Conjuring trailer? Should we be comparing it to what you already know about Insidious?
Well, even comparing it to that trailer, I remember watching that trailer and I thought it looked visually, like, different than other, like, haunted house movies or, you know, that I had seen before, so...
It may have something to do with a bigger budget now.
Maybe. Well, that doesn't really make sense, though, because if this movie has a bigger budget, it should look better. Like, it doesn't look better. Like, I don't see anything that made me gravitate to the other movie in this one. Like, I just felt like you said, it's kind of more the same, only it just didn't appeal to, I didn't appeal to it, so I'm kind of in the middle. What's our middle grade for trailer hitches?
We don't have one.
There isn't one.
Shit.
We will never have one.
I guess I'll bitch, but I could change that upon a watch.
Interesting. All right, let's mention that we have merchandise available to purchase now.
Merchandise.
You always got something. Yes, you can get t-shirts and more if you visit Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. In the future, you'll be able to purchase just about anything with our logo on it, I'm sure.
Yeah, guarantee it.
All right, I'm holding
from to t-shirts guarantee. To thongs.
Thongs. It's a little bit better than last week. So please show your support for the show by visiting ZAZZLE.com/first-time-watchers and find an item that you'll be proud to wear, like a thong?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
A thong with Tim's face on it.
Oh my god, you've just given me a brilliant idea.
I hate you all. Once again, that is Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. All right, let's get into our discussion of Only God Forgives.
Eskimo killed my brother.
I saw him cry beside me.
Did you get the guy that did it?
It's a little more complicated than that, but...
He hasn't told you, has he? There was someone else involved. Some cop.
You can't go around killing cops anymore.
The plot. Julian, a drug smuggler thriving in Bangkok's criminal underworld, sees his life get even more complicated when his mother compels him to find and kill whoever is responsible for his brother's recent death. The director, Nicholas Winding Refn. The actors, Ryan Gosling, Kristen Thomas, and Vithaya Pensringerharm. Sorry. Walter.
Yo.
I believe you actually might have some sort of interesting experience to relay regarding the setting in which you saw this film.
I got to see this in Toronto at the TIFF Lightbox ahead of the Toronto International Film Festival.
And what is the TIFF Lightbox?
It's where they're going to be showing a lot of the movies for the Toronto International Film Festival. I guess it's a big... It's a fairly large theater. It's got several floors to it. Real nice theater.
Yeah.
I can tell you that because there is no soda available at the concession stand. You get popcorn and treats and it's like... It's everything's really, really sparse and neat, and the seats are really comfortable.
Wait! You said no soda?
Yeah, there's no soda. There are no soda machines. You can buy drinks in a bottle, but you can't buy soda machines. And there's only like one guy making popcorn. There's a very limited amount of treats.
I was about to say that'd be a little odd if you could have popcorn but not anything to drink.
It's a theater that's geared toward people who want to watch movies, as opposed to people who are going to bring the family out.
Right.
So we went there, and really close to the screen, really nice screen. We had just missed a...
And now, is it just like one screen in the building, or is it kind of a small multiplex?
It's a small multiplex.
Okay.
There's a stage in front of the screen that has a podium. So apparently, we just missed the opening speeches for the Toronto National Film Festival. The same day we went to go see... It was earlier that day. So it was still set up for public speaking. And it looked fantastic on the screen we saw it at.
Uh-huh.
This movie is one of those movies that... When I first saw it, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. As time has gone on, I've severely softened my opinion of this movie, and it's actually really starting to grow on me. And that'll be reflected in my final letter grade when we get to that part of the show.
Okay, but I mean, overall about the movie, though.
Overall, if I go by my impressions then, recalling how I felt after I got out of the movie then is. Fairly harsh. If I look at it from the way I feel about it now, it's very different. I think this movie, I'm going to go by the way I feel about it now, real tight. Like, really tight. And one of the things that Nicholas Winding Refn is really known for is people not saying anything. It's just expressions and just long shots of somebody's face. Or these really slow moving scenes.
Now, how many other of his movies have you seen?
I've seen Drive, Valhalla, and that would be it. Yep, and yeah, that would be it out of those movies. And but I see a kind of a pattern developing here. I still need to see the Pusher next. That's like the next on my list. But he's very deliberate in his pacing and even with the way the scene moves. There's a scene at the very beginning of the movie where Ryan Gosling is reaching into a doorway, and it is incredibly, incredibly slow. Just him reaching through this doorway. I think because of this pacing, the movie is really tense at times. And then it switches to being a little off-putting and strange when you see what Chang, the antagonist to Ryan Gosling's character, does after certain scenes where he's singing karaoke. Even the way that Chang walks is very slowly. He'll take a step, then bring his feet together, then take another step, and bring his feet together, take another step, bring his feet together. And the more I think about it, the more I really dug that. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, the fuck is this shit? Like, this looks, like, so artsy-fartsy, but, like, the more I've thought about it, the more I've let it marinate, it's... when I tell you when I get to the grade part, you'll see just how much it's actually... how much it's improved to me since initially seeing it.
Hermano, your most anticipated movie of the year.
Yes, it is. And I am much like Wally. Initially, right after watching this movie, I was just kind of like, what the hell? And then something happened about 3 days later. This movie did something the equivalent of like planting like a seed in me or something and just like watched it grow.
Exactly.
Because I just kept thinking about this movie. Like, days later, I was thinking about it, and I was just like, what was it all about? Like, what does it all mean, Tim? And I did a complete 180. Like, I'm not going to say I loved it, because I had such high hopes for this movie that, like, the reaches of which it could never reach, like, it was that high. Like, I loved Drive so much that coming off of Drive, like, this movie had to have been, like, a grand slam. And while it wasn't a complete grand slam for me, there was a lot in it that I dug. Visuals, for one, fantastic. Like Wally was saying, every frame of this movie is so tightly, like, you could just, I feel like you every could just frame see, matters. Like, he's literally in every shot. Like, everything is done so deliberately, and you feel like this movie came out exactly the way he wanted. Like, it's that well directed. Now, this movie's not for everybody because it's not a conventional like 3-act structure. The narrative is very loose. Like, I mean, I think Ryan Gosling probably says the equivalent of like 20 words in the entire movie. But if you can read between the lines, and this movie's a grower for sure. Like, after I was done watching it, like, Mia liked it, which blew me away, because she did not like Drive, and she liked this. And I first did not like it. I was just kind of like,
how can you let her live with you if she doesn't like Drive?
But no, me and Caitlin saw it, and she had the same reaction.
She liked
it. She dug it, and I was like,
this movie is directed towards women, obviously. No, just kidding. But, I don't know if Wally felt the same way. Like, coming off of Drive, I was expecting something similar to Drive, especially the way the trailers were. I was expecting something very stylized, much like Drive was, pitting two guys against each other, much like Drive was. I got something much, much more similar to Valhalla Rising. Like, I thought this movie was, like, if Drive and Valhalla Rising had a baby, it would be this. And, I'm a fan of Nicholas Winding Refn. I know that this movie is very divisive based on, you know, if you go by Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, but I mean, it's grown on me, and I dug it quite a bit.
So yeah, you talk about your guys' reactions shifting dramatically as time went by, and my reaction did not shift at all as time went by. It was very, very similar. I mean, it shifted very minutely, but it was very similar to how I felt after watching it, you know, coming off of it right away. However, I do find it very interesting that Ryan Gosling is in my two favorite movies of the year so far. This movie is so fucking awesome. You're right. The composition of this film is tremendous. The staging of the cameras and the lighting is so beautiful.
Yes.
Just gorgeous. You're right, Hermano. This movie is not for everybody. And it is very, very similar to Valhalla Rising. And I'm one who does not like Valhalla Rising.
See, I did like Valhalla Rising. But even liking Valhalla Rising, it's still... that initial reaction to watching this movie, I wasn't expecting that. And it caught me off guard.
Well, I think I may have been lucky in that... hearing other people talk about this movie, saying that you should not expect Drive. Do not expect a direct follow-up to Drive. And maybe I was lucky in that regard, because I did not expect that. I expected a much slower, slower paced movie that probably a more artsy movie. And this is a very artsy film.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are like fever dreams in this movie that are almost premonitions, essentially.
Yes.
And it is extremely deliberately paced. However, there was one thing that as I was going on in this movie, I'm like, Jesus Christ. And especially by the end, I was like, who was I supposed to root for? And it wasn't until I heard Devendra Hardwar talk on the Slash Filmcast in his reaction to this movie, and he pointed out that the cop... That he is somebody who is out for justice at any cost, and will do anything. And that kind of plays off of what you had said, Wally, in that he is the antagonist to Ryan Gosling's character. And I think if you look at this film as the cop being the protagonist of this film, it changes your mind about this movie completely.
Yes.
And it made a lot more sense to me. Because I'm like, well... What does Ryan Gosling's character, Julian, what is his purpose? You know, what is he doing? He doesn't seem a very confident person. You know, he doesn't. I've heard others say that he's impotent. And thinking back on it, if you think of his actions throughout the film,
yeah, he could very well be.
Literally, he may and figuratively may be impotent.
I wouldn't say he's completely impotent. I would say he's socially like inept or impotent. Hmm. Like, I feel like when he needs to rise to action, he does. But socially, he just seems retarded in this movie. Like he can't vocally convey like emotion or even just string together a sentence to let people know or get across what he's feeling. Like there are scenes in this movie where when called to action, he rises to action. Like he will get physical if need be. I agree with you guys. I never thought that it was clear who the main character was. Like, you can say the cop is the main character, but you could have someone argue that Ryan Gosling is the main character, and you couldn't really say they were wrong, because I feel like there's equal screen time between the both of them. I agree with you guys. The cop is definitely a out-for-justice type cop. He's kind of like an eye-for-an-eye type guy. Like, he doesn't believe in let the justice system sort it out. He just kind of he believes in like revenge, and like it's very like strong in this movie, like the sense of that revenge is what he's after. And like I don't know, man, this movie, like, I've never had a movie like where I watched it and like initially I was just kind of down on it, but like 3 days later, like I've never done such a complete 180 where not only did I not just like, it just didn't move up a notch. Like, I actually really liked it. Like, yeah. 3 days later, where, like, just a few days ago, I was just kind of like, oh, man, that's so disappointing. I was so looking forward to this movie.
And can we all come to an agreement, please, that Cliff Martinez now is a god? Because he is an angel sent down from the heavens to produce an oral sensation in my ears that is drippy, gooey goodness. Oh, dear God. The score in this movie is phenomenal. Perfect. As tight as the composition of this film.
Yes.
Everything about this film. I mean, it's like we are literally inside the mind of Nicholas Winding Refn, because you are right, Hermano. He produced exactly what he envisioned. And it's a labor of love, which in some cases doesn't turn out that well. You know, labor of love's in other directors...
tend to fall flat.
Well, look at Zack Snyder with Sucker Punch. Yes. That was a labor of love, and that shit bombed.
That's what
can happen when a labor of love goes completely off the rails. Like, in this case, I don't think so. I think he got exactly what he wanted. I mean, I from what I've seen from him, and like, I've seen pretty much every one of his movies, aside from maybe some shorts or like really, really early stuff. And he has literally not let me down once. Wally, when you get into the Pusher trilogy,
oh yeah,
that is literally one of my favorite trilogies of all time. Like, it's hard. Like, I mean, all three movies are really strong. Maybe the third one being the weakest, but the first two are fantastic, and the third one is actually pretty strong. Maybe not like as bad as like Godfather 3, But, like...
Well, I don't know if you want to make that comparison.
No, I'm not going to say that the Push trilogy is anywhere near the Godfather trilogy. I'm just saying, like, it's that... I was going to compare, like, saying, like, the first two were so strong, and then all of a sudden the third one just kind of came out, and everyone was just kind of like, eh. But I was going to make that comparison, but I think it doesn't fall that far off from the
other
two.
In a few weeks, I think we're going to be reviewing another one of his films, Fear X.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From 2003. So, a 10-year-old movie, I'm interested, you know, because I think that was after... or in between one of the pushers, mm-hmm. you know? So I'm curious to go and look at that. You're right about the critical response to because this movie has like we have all said, it has a lot in common with Valhalla Rising.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes scores. Now for Only God Forgives, critic rating 40%. For Valhalla Rising, 71%. I'm thinking to myself, I have no idea what the people are thinking. What are I have
That's
no
weird.
Idea. Because to me, Valhalla Rising has much less of a coherent plot and is much more of an art film than this film is. This movie actually has a coherent plot.
Yes.
There is a through line. Mm-hmm. There are people have motivations, you know?
Yeah.
However artfully shot it is and executed it is, it's still very clear.
But they love the shit out of fucking Holy Motors. Figure that out.
Yeah, I don't get that.
However, the audience response is almost identical. For Only God Forgives, 45%. Valhalla Rising, 46%.
Huh. That's, yeah. Well, I think a lot of people may have been misled because of the accessibility and success of Drive.
I don't know about that.
I think people might have been misled. They see Ryan Gosling and they're like, oh, that's the dude from Drive.
Yeah, I don't think as many people like Drive as you think, because I think critically it's pretty well regarded, but I think major or regular moviegoers aren't that fond of that movie. So.
We haven't even touched on one of the amazing performances in this.
First
in this
off, film. I could be wrong because audience response for Drive is 78%.
See,
I apologize.
Pretty high.
I apologize.
Kristen Scott Thomas. Yes.
She is awesome.
Holy shit! What? I mean, she obviously has the most to do. Definitely the most dialogue. The most like in your face dialogue of anyone in the movie. But man, does she! It doesn't even matter. Like, that was such a powerful, great, like, performance. Holy shit. Like, that dinner scene, dude, that is going to haunt my nightmares. Like, that is amazing, that scene. Just the vitriol, how fucking angry she is.
Yes.
At, like, his ineptness and how he doesn't say a fucking single word the entire dinner. Like,
and it's all, he all releases it later, that next scene, you know? Yeah, in which he forces his girlfriend to do that stuff. But speaking about the woman in this film, that one scene in which the cop goes to the strip club to interrogate one of the people that's involved in his hunt, you know, and his hit, if you will. And you know he tells all the women to close their eyes. And this is something that is showing a start of a theme for Refn, because you remember in Drive when Gosling shows up with the hammer in the strip club dressing room,
yep.
All the women are still. They react as if it's commonplace, if nothing is happening, you know.
Yeah.
And the same thing, that there may be a few grimaces here and there in this movie with their eyes closed, but they're reacting nonplussed, essentially. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that is a hell of a scene.
The violence in this movie is whoa. Like, some of it is pretty out there. Like, I mean, I saw some stuff in this movie that I had not seen in like violence wise in a lot of movies of this type. Like, there's that scene with the cop who carries like this katana sword, I guess, like just slices someone down the ribcage.
Yeah.
And you just see his rib
pop out. That's the guy who tried to kill him.
Yeah. Like, holy shit. And I mean, and I felt like he was weirdly moral. Like, I felt like in any other scene, like, he would pretty much kill, like...
Well, he would kill the other dude in any of the movie. But he's basically showing us, like, you would try this again. I'm be nice
because
to you.
Because he sees that he has a son who's, like, handicapped.
He's really sick.
So,
like, don't you ever forget this.
Yeah. Yeah, and he doesn't... He lets him go. And you know... And I'm interested in what you guys think of, like, the story. Like, what did you guys... get out of this movie? Like, what's Ryan Gosling's character's story?
See, I don't know if it's...
Because I'm interested in, like, I've heard a bunch of different interpretations. I'm just interested in what you guys thought.
Well, I mean, his story isn't, I don't think, is nearly as interesting as the cop's story. His story, he's just an emasculated man who
has an overbearing mother.
Yeah, yeah, it's a relatively simple thing.
And there's also implication of sexual abuse.
Oh, yes. Much more than that. I mean,
verbal abuse.
I mean, Kristen Scott Thomas describes her son's penises, full-grown penises.
Compares them.
Yeah, and describes them in startling clarity.
Yeah.
See, I definitely found myself gravitating more to his character than the cop, because I felt like the cop was very, I don't want to say one note, but he was kind of like Ryan Gosling's character from Drive, where he was very, followed a strict set of rules. Without really depicting what his rules were or this, like, code he lives by, where he was consistent throughout the entire movie. And I found myself being more interested in Ryan Gosling's character because you really don't get to know that much about him. So I gravitated more. Like, I wanted to know more. I wanted to know more about, like, why he is the way he is and why he's in Bangkok. Like, you know, he's obviously an American living in a country that the way it's depicted in this movie is like a hell.
Yeah.
Because they do not show you any, like, scenic area of Bangkok. They show you the slums.
The slummies.
They show you the dirty side of Bangkok, like, the dirty, like, people that live in Bangkok, pretty much crime and corruption. I just felt like his character was just, his mother does, I mean, it's potential spoilers, so I won't get into that, but the whole thing with how he reacts to his mother, how he's just pretty much silent in her presence, and how when she comes to visit, he gets this look on his face, like, when he knows that she's coming, like, that he's, like, fucking petrified, like, he's scared. Like, he's so, like, bent out of shape that she's coming without really, just in one look on his face, I could tell that he does not want anything to do with her. He pretty much is, you almost get the sense that he's there to get away from her. Like, and when she shows up, it's just his whole life is turned upside down. She expects all these things from him that she didn't even have to ask of her other son, who something bad happens to him.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about Ryan Gosling's character, because if I guess his job is he's this manager at this fight club, at this
Thai boxing school,
and you could say that's his life, that's almost his religion, because if you go to the scene where he fights the cop. Now, first off, I love the preamble to that, where he goes up to him and says, "You want to fight?" I mean, just it's cop, like a schoolyard,
dude,
you know?
I love that scene, because the cop is, like, not even facing him, and he just kind of turns around, like, doesn't even give him his full attention, just kind of looks at him halfway, and is just, like, nods up and down, like, doesn't even say yeah, like, so awesome.
So, that next scene, that the way that the fight scene in the arena is shot, and also scored, is like they're in a church, because they... Refn constantly cuts back to the statue that I guess is supposed to be some sort of mythical or spiritual statue, you know, but
of a fighter in a fighting stance.
But it's shot in a way of like looking up at the cross at the crucifix, you know. So it's obviously shot in a way that this is his religion, the arena, the fighting, you know, the fight club, that is his church. Mm-hmm. You know, we are in his church right now, and he's getting beaten to a pulp in his own church.
Yeah. That was really my only nitpick of the movie, believe it or not. The only nitpick that I had.
Why?
Is that I always hate it when it just seems that a person who you would expect to know how to fight, that he runs a, you know, kickboxing school, suddenly forgets how to fight.
I think he knew how to fight. It's just that
I just think he was out of his class.
Yeah,
like, he was out of his.
Yeah, I see that, because like I mean, the way the fight choreography, the way I was watching it, the way I was seeing it, it just looked like he had like openings where he should have been more defensive. When Chang's attacking him, he's just taking punches. I'm like,
also note how he became less effective. He wasn't very effective to begin with, but he became less effective when his mother walked in.
Yeah, and then Chang really started pouring it on,
right?
And you know, started just mauling him. So I was like, all right, ladies, if you're looking to see Ryan Gosling get his ass handed to him, this is the movie for you.
Right.
I love the way that scene was shot, because in most movies it would be, they would try to mask the fact that it's obvious that he must have not trained, because he's not like, Gosling is not like out of this world fighting ability. Like, he looks like he can maybe hold his own, but the way they shot it mostly wide, and then every once in a while they would get like a medium shot
or an over the top.
Yeah. So, and the it's not like some crazy like Matrix fight scene or anything. Like he's not throwing roundhouse kicks like a crazy bastard. Like he's just fighting with his hands mostly. The cop though is just so much better, so much more fluid, and Ryan Gosling just looks like a just like he's not as skilled and not just as I don't know. It just seems so out of his league. And you're right, Tim. Like when his mom shows up and he just catches a glance, just a short glance of her, it's almost like he just gives up. Like he just like, I can't. Like, and I think without getting into, I think this might be a potential spoiler, but I feel like there's a reason why he gives up.
We should go to spoilers.
I mean, for me personally, I felt like he gives up because he knows what will happen if he doesn't win. Like, he knows this guy's going to go after his mom because he's going to find out that his mom is behind this hit on him. And we all see where that leads.
Yeah.
And that was a great scene, too. And the scene that follows that as well, I was just like, holy shit, man, this movie is out there.
I was going to mention... I forgot. Was there anything else you wanted to mention?
A couple of things. Like, I love like how that fight scene starts off with just Chang walking and stopping all the way around Ryan Gosling, basically looking at him from all angles.
Yeah.
And then they start
to
fight. So you have like this like quiet action.
Well, you notice that he the cop never is on the offensive. He's always on the he lets Gosling take the move first. Yeah. I want to talk about these premonitions that you see throughout the film, especially by Ryan Gosling. You had alluded to it earlier, Wally, where he is like reaching towards a door, and then he has his arms like exposed, and they get sliced off from a side angle, and I'm just like, you know, what is Refn trying to convey with these premonitions? You know, why is he's pretty much saying that these people know what's coming, you know? Is that what he's trying to do?
I wish I could tell you. Like, I'm not entirely sure exactly what the takeaway from that, like, other than the fact that it's just foreshadowing.
Yes,
For me, it was foreshadowing. I mean, obviously, if you look back, it's easy to say it was foreshadowing what happens at the end, because we see what happens at the end, but I feel like the reason Ryan Gosling is constantly clenching his fists is looking at his open palms and looking up at the statue, and he's hovering around that statue a lot in the movie, the statue in the fighting stance, and it's because you cut off his hands, you take his power. I mean, you take the only thing he has left, and he's come halfway across the world.
Wow, that's a good point, because you see the only other sexual power that he can exert is with his hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh man, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and I don't know,
because she even ties his hands down at the very beginning, the girl that he's with.
Yep.
So he can't. His hands are basically tied to the.
Yeah.
And he can't do anything about it.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, the whole scene too, where his mother gives him one last like order, and he just kind of follows it blindly, where he goes to Chang's house, and has the. I mean, he has all the time in the world to take out Chang's daughter. And he obviously disobeys his mom, kills the guy that's with him, the henchman or whatever. And all of that is just leading up to the fact that he knows that when, one, he's doing the right thing, and two, it's because he wants his mother out of the picture. He wants his mother dead. I thought that was pretty clear. I don't know if you guys got that.
No, I'm not sure that. I didn't get that initially, but that's actually a pretty good...
I mean,
cause, assessment.
I mean, there's nothing in this. I mean, even when he sees his mom has to tell him, give your mother a kiss, give your mother a hug, because he doesn't want to do any of that. He's forced to do these things because he despises his mom.
But she also made him kill his father, too.
Yes.
Although I did find it, I found it very interesting how she was part, you know, pretty much the kingpin of this drug operation.
Yeah, yeah.
From the States, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't gather that until she spoke it out.
Phone, like, on the phone with somebody, like, about a delivery of coke or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And,
You know, the color palette in this movie is just tremendous. And it's almost all, you know, red and
very
and yellow,
harsh, like reds
and
blues. Like,
very well, the blues that doesn't come across very often. I remember one key scene in which Julian is looking at himself in the mirror, and that tone is very blue, you know. But other than that, it's just it's mostly very warm, a very warm color mm-hmm. throughout. However, at the end of the movie, you know, Chang catches up with Julian. The cop catches up with Julian at the strip club.
Yeah.
And then you immediately cut right to them outside in the woods or something like that. I mean, I'm like, what was the point of that?
I think it's that they didn't need to have any dialogue at that point. They just needed to change the scene. Because basically at that point, Ryan Gosling knows the jig's up. Like,
no, but I mean, why the shift in location?
Why didn't you just do it there?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that it needed to be there, I guess. Like, maybe they just wanted to go somewhere. I mean, anytime he commits any of those acts, I mean, the only one he does it in public space is was that the karaoke bar? Where the guy with the hairpins into the knees?
Oh, yes, it was a karaoke bar.
That's right. And I felt like that was, like, those karaoke scenes, by the way, those are the only thing in the movie where I felt like, man, maybe this is going a little too artsy, because those came out of nowhere. Like, I don't know what the point of those are. Especially with the rest of the cops that he's constantly surrounded by.
Oh, I took something away from that, actually.
What'd you take away
from that? So you have, like, the first scene, he has the guy who Ryan Gosling's brother ends up killing. Like, he kills that guy's daughter.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, why didn't you do anything? That was your daughter.
Yeah.
And he cuts his hand off.
Yeah.
And then the next scene, he's singing in karaoke with his guys all around him.
Yeah.
A couple of the guys were there. So basically, he's just basically like, I'm not bothered by any of this. This is what I do. You know what I mean?
Okay.
In fact, I can slice a guy in half with my sword.
And then go sing karaoke.
And then go sing karaoke. Like, and then these guys buy into... He's like a god to these guys because they show up. They're like his disciples. They want to be him.
And that's the thing is, these cops are obviously very corrupt because, I mean, he's going about doing these things that these policemen should be like, dude, this is not really cool, but he's got like... entire police force there, like watching him sing karaoke. Like, he's got these guys, like,
his lieutenants are there. Yeah. All the officers are there, the people
now,
who are in charge.
Talking about those karaoke scenes, did you notice this? And speaking of composition, how in that earlier scene where he's singing karaoke, and then the last scene, the cops are all positioned in exactly the same locations.
Yep.
You know, the way they're seated and the way it's shot, nobody moves, and it's like I can just imagine Refn going up to a glass and saying, "Now I'm going to move it 1 inch this way." And then looking, and I need your foot half an inch to the left. No, move back to no a little more right there. You know, and just everything being so meticulous.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell everything is meticulously placed in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really amazing. Anything else?
I just want to talk about the cinematography. because in a lot of movies, I don't really feel like I'm there.
Oh yeah.
Like, but this movie. I feel like I am sweating bombs in a theater that's air conditioning because of like just you see like just how like Thailand's really hot. You know what I mean? And so it's hot and humid and steamy and you see like the characters are sweating. I'm physically uncomfortable because like this really I realize I'm in an AC climate controlled theater, but at the same time I'm feeling like hot and stifled because of the way that everything's framed.
Now you were in a theater, do you think your reaction or viewing of this film would have been altered if you saw it, say, at home?
I don't know. I know that I will be seeing it again at home.
Okay.
Because I want the Blu-ray when it comes out. Because I want to see what else went on, like,
in
this movie.
Sure, but you'd already have seen it, so you already know what's coming. But, see, that's what I'm curious about, because Hermano and I both saw it at home, so... on our TVs.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I put away everything. I was not distracted.
I think I would have had a problem with distractions.
Yeah.
If I were watching them, just because the way I initially felt about the movie, the way I was really perceiving the movie, like, I'm in a theater, I have no place to go. You know what I mean? I have my phones off. I prefer watching movies in theaters because that allows me to be more focused.
Right.
Where I'm not, you know, hearing people outside yelling or loud cars driving by. I can just give it my full undivided attention.
Was your attention undivided, Hermano?
Well, I watched it with Mia, and I think we did comment to each other a few times, but other than that, I was able to follow along with the movie just fine. And it was definitely, like I always say, like the greatest compliment for a movie is that whether or not I liked it is I want to watch it again right away. And I can't say that I wanted to watch it right away, like right after I was done watching it, but 3 days later, I felt myself really, really wanting to see it again. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it again.
Yeah. Anything else?
That's all I got. All
right. We asked Twitter, as usual, for their reactions, and we had a few responses. Gabriel Cancelo, at G. Cancelo, Gosling in a role that Sean Penn would have made his own 20 years ago. K.S. Thomas excels as the mother, another cult classic. That is an odd statement.
I wouldn't say cult classic.
But no, I'm saying Sean Penn in a role that he would have made his own 20 years ago?
I could see that. Really? I'm thinking like Mystic River.
Oh yeah, that's like 10 years ago. I'm thinking like
Bad Boys.
You
ever see Bad Boys?
Bits and pieces a long time ago. 10 Second Reviews, at 10 Second Reviews. 4 out of 10. A series of violent, perverse, and bizarre scenes held together by a poor plot. Even Gosling looks a bit bored and confused. See, I don't get that poor plot. I thought it was very straightforward. And
I don't think it's anything to do with the plot being hard to follow or being particularly poorly written. I just think it's not structured in a way that's easily accessible for everyone.
That's true. A friend of the show, Neil Ramsey, at Neil Ramsey, watching a director money shot for 90 minutes in slow motion while you sit in the corner trying to get hard and failing.
Wow.
Now, Scott Mendelson responded to that tweet. I sadly knew exactly what film you were referring to before seeing the whole thread. And yes, you're correct.
Wow.
Yeah. So you're right. This movie is not for everybody.
Let it grow on you. Let it grow on you.
Marinate. I think these people have seen a long enough time ago to have had it marinate enough. I can't recommend this to everybody.
No,
absolutely not.
You have to be very selective with who you recommend it to.
I can count on one hand how many people I could possibly recommend this to.
I mean, I was afraid of what Wally was going to be saying into this review.
I was really interesting because I know sometimes Wally has a hard time with movies that are like very artsy, and I felt like this movie was straddling that line.
What did you think of Valhalla Rising?
I dug it. Like, I mean, it's one of those things. Like, yeah, I prefer like as I stand right now, I prefer like the crazy action movies and like the off the wall stuff. But by the same token, if you could choose something like different,
yeah.
Like in the case of like I keep going back to my favorite movies that like that I put Valhalla Rising in the same genre, Synecdoche, New York. You know what I mean? One of those like really trippy, like thought provoking, like pick up on little nuances here and there. Like Valhalla, I don't think it's as nuanced. I still dug it. Like I thought it was different enough that it I really got a kick out of it.
Interesting. You want to get into grades?
Sure.
Wally?
All right, when I first saw this movie, I gave it a D-.
Oh, wow!
Okay. Oh, crap.
Another movie that you would have graded lower than Blubberella.
Yeah, exactly. But as time has gone on since I've seen it, it is actually upgraded to a B.
A B?
Yep, so I'm going to average both of them with a C.
Now, why would you average it?
Because I know that people are going to see this eventually.
But this isn't for other people, this is your own
well, I know, but basically, if someone says, oh, well, this guy gave it a C, I think it's right now, right in the middle. Like I'm going to meld the both of my initial impressions at the same time.
I'm still a little confused. Why?
Because I can't ignore how I felt about it the first time around. You know what I mean? So the first time around, I
see where he's going. I mean, he's only seen it once.
If we did this the week after it came out, I would have been far harsher. You know what I mean? And just probably would have ripped this movie a new one. But as more I've thought about it, the more I've like kind of let it hit and let it sink in, it has greatly improved to me. Like I think it's awesome. So I can't ignore my first movie, and I can't ignore how I feel about it now. So I'm going to put the two of them together and meet them in the middle.
Interesting. Hermano?
Similar to Wally, I watched this movie a month ago, so I was having a hard time remembering certain plot elements and stuff like that, but overall, when I first finished watching it, I was ready to give it something along the lines of like a C-. The way I feel today, a month later, and I've had a month to think about it, I give it like an A-.
Wow. It's interesting, because my initial reaction was one grade, and you guys have both increased your grade, and my grade increased only very slightly. My initial reaction was a B+, but it's gone up to an A- for me.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, if you think about it, Herman and I both walked out of that both at first going, what the fuck? Yeah. But you were like, I love it.
I had a much stronger reaction to it. So yeah.
You're going from high to higher. But like Hermione and I making a much larger jump.
I took a huge leap.
Yeah. Well, you had given a C.
Yeah, I'm averaging a B and a D minus together to give it a C.
A C, an A minus. It probably is around a B. I guess. Okay. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
And you know what we love? We love feedback, and we love reviews! And reviews on iTunes are awesome, and especially if you subscribe to our feed on iTunes. So please download our episodes on iTunes, and once again, feel free to leave a review, because we love feedback.
Please do, because it also helps us on iTunes. It moves us up further up in the queue for movie podcasts. So any reviews you want to give us, positive or negative, will certainly help.
Yes. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing Jeff Nichols' latest film, Mud.
That is the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch. Now, I've got antivirus on.
Oh, this, totally messed up
on this machine.
I forgot I watched District 9 too.
Well, you can talk about this episode.
I should have talked about it last episode, though. It's going to seem weird all of a sudden. I'm like, hey, I watched District 9.
Well, you could just say, after we saw Lisa, you saw District 9 as opposed
to. But before. I don't want to be untruthful.
Well, with Tim doing this right now, of course it's going to be untruthful.
I'm not recording.
Okay. I have my integrity
to think of. Yes, you do, sir. Because you have integrity and you are integral. It's a show.
Oh, I see what you did there.
See what I did there? It's a double word.
I did.